Picture this for a minute. You've got a doctor's office. There's a really large man who possibly weighs 250 kilos. And you've got a woman who's struggling with her weight. She might weigh 100 kilos, like less than half that what he does. They both go in at separate times to get Wegovy or Ozempic to use it for weight loss to help on their journeys. They'll both walk out with the same prescription. And more importantly, they'll both walk out generally with the same dosage recommendations. Now, these dosage recommendations come from the pharmacy company, Novo Nordisk. Novo Nordisk are the ones that own the patent to the medicine. They own the delivery device. They own everything. And they're also the ones who inform doctors what is the optimal dosage. And that dosage is generally, you start off at 0.25 milligrams of a semaglutide for 4 weeks. And then after 4 weeks, you're instructed to double it. And then after another 4 weeks, you are generally instructed to go up again. And then after another 4 weeks, you're instructed to go up again. So it's just a steady increase until you get to 2.4 milligram dosage. That's their maintenance dose, 2.4 milligrams. I have a bit of a problem with that. And I'm not a doctor, but after speaking to many, many people and doing tons of research, I think that we could be doing things much better than that and in a much more personalised way. And there's really 5 reasons why, and I'm going to talk about them on the podcast this week. Welcome to Investigating Ozempic. I'm Bern. Before we get started on the podcast, there's been an announcement on the 21st of Feb from the FDA. It has determined that there is no longer a shortage of semaglutide, of Ozempic and Wegovy. They have decided that that is resolved, that the issues they had with manufacture, that Novo Nordisk had with manufacture, is resolved, and that the status of saying that there is a shortage is going to finish. Now, what that means is that people that were getting a compounded version of semaglutide possibly are going to have problems obtaining that. Like what happens here in Australia, if there is a shortage of a medication, other companies can step in to produce that medication. The difference is that the medications, the compounded medications, are generally not FDA approved. So there is a risk with taking a compounded medication. And that's the big point that Novo Nordisk have been pushing. I think they even did an ad questioning the integrity of what you're using and what you're injecting into your body. Semaglutide have been in shortage since 2022 because of the huge demand. This is going to make a really big difference. So for example, there are in the US, a really large healthcare provider called Hims and Hers Health, when they were selling their compounded semaglutide, I think for 100 and something a month, what happened to them is their stock price plunged 22% once that was announced. So that's the difference it can make to a compounding company. This is important because Americans who couldn't afford Wegovy because of the huge price of it or have struggled to find it often turned to the cheaper versions sold by pharmacies and telehealth providers. Now, the FDA has given these compounders 60 to 90 days to stop selling it. That is big news for the people using it in the US. The OFA, which is the Outsourcing Facilities Association, is suing the FDA after that announcement. This body, the OFA, represents compounders. So they're suing, saying that they believe there's still a shortage and they believe that they should be still be able to compound the medications. Now, the two big dates are April 22nd, which is when pharmacies must stop selling the compounded version, and May 22nd is when distributors must stop distributing. Let's see what happens with that. Possibly a delay tactic, or, you know, possibly it will work because they did the same thing. They sued when the FDA declared that Mounjaro and Zepbound were no longer in shortage as well. If you're a listener of this podcast, then you will probably already know that Novo Nordisk, who are the Danish manufacturer of Ozempic and Wegovy. Ozempic is prescribed for diabetes and Wegovy is prescribed for weight loss. The difference is that Wegovy comes in a much higher dosage and it is more expensive than Ozempic. We're paying a ton of money for our weight loss drugs. When you fill your prescription of Ozempic or Wegovy, it comes in a pen. The patent for that is also owned by Novo Nordisk. It's called the delivery device. And also on that pen is a little needle that also is owned by Novo Nordisk. They also have a patent on that. Now, they've been strenuously protecting their patents for years. There are more patent lawsuits on the net than I can tell you about. There are so many of them. They are continually protecting their golden goose or their blockbuster drug, because these drugs are blockbusters. They earn more than $1 billion a year. They have turned this company into one of the richest in Europe. The Wegovy pen, or the delivery device, is called the Flex Touch. That's the trademark name. When you use a pen, the dosages are fixed on that pen. So they're set, they're preset, those dosages. So if you're injecting 0.25, you turn the dial around to 0.25 and you inject. So there's not a lot of room for changing the dosages on the pens. When you use the 1 milligram pen, you turn it around to the 1 milligram and you inject that. Again, not a lot of room for changing the dosage. You're certainly not encouraged to change the dosage at all. I mean, Novo Nordisk instruct you to stick to the schedule of dosages, and they also instruct you to not count the clicks. The clicks are when you're turning the dial of the pen to turn it up to your dosage, it clicks, it does a little click. And some people on the net are equating those clicks with dosage, with varying the dosage. It's very clear that Novo Nordisk do not want you to count the pen clicks. It says it in black and white on their instruction sheets. So there's not a lot of room for moving with your dosage. They supply the pen, they supply the medicine, they supply the needle, and it's all preset. So very hard to change things. That's great for them because they get all the money from people using semaglutide. They get all the money from the pens because they own the patents. They get all the money from the medicine because they own all the medicine. And they got all the money from the needles because they own the needles as well. So they're winning all the way around. I think we all know that Big Pharma is in the business of making money. That's no great surprise. There's no shock or horror there. I think we're all well aware of it. And they've done a pretty good job on Ozempic and Wegovy to turn these drugs into blockbusters because they own everything. They even own, if you listened to last week's episode, which I hope you did, they're even owning a lot of the health professionals. They're paying them money to do talks, to come to seminars. So they're buying everything. They're paying big money in advertising. They're charging us a fortune for these drugs. And they're supplying them in a way that is very difficult to change, unless you want to start counting clicks, which I'm not advocating that you do, but that's completely up to you. There are large documents that I'm going to attach to the show notes today. And you can go to these show notes and look at what I'm talking about. But they are big. I'm just going to warn you. So, for example, the first one is an Wegovy document. It is 392 pages. It comes from the Center for Drug Evaluation and Research, and it's the application that Novo Nordisk have given to the FDA for semaglutide to be used in higher dosages for weight loss. Basically, it's the Wegovy application. There is a lot of it redacted, which means you can't see it. Like, there's big grey boxes on top of sections, and there are pages that are gone that I cannot see. But I'm going to attach that document. The other one that I'm going to attach is a 177-page document. It's from the European Medicines Agency. Now, they're like the FDA, but for Europe. And this document is dated 11th of November 2021, and it's the assessment report for Wegovy. It's a similar document to what you're looking at for the FDA. It looks into this drug in detail. And I'm going to be referring to them quite a few times. So go in and have a little look, because they're pretty fascinating. There is a third document I'll attach because I'm Australian, and it is the Australian, the Therapeutic Goods Association of Australia, their assessment report on Wegovy. I'll attach that as well. There are really five things that greatly impact how you react to semaglutide in your body. And people don't talk about it because it's buried deep in clinical data, clinical trials, scientific journals. It's hard to find. But there are five things that are going to affect how you react to semaglutide. The first one is body weight. The second one is whether you're diabetic or pre-diabetic. The third one is sex. It's whether you're male or female. The fourth thing is age. What is your age? How old are you? And the fifth thing is race and ethnicity. I'm going to go into each of those five things and explain what sort of a difference they could make to you and what they've seen in clinical trials with these five particular points. So grab a cuppa, get comfy, and hope you enjoy the show. There's a scientific word. It's called exposure. And I think some people will know what that is and some people won't know what it is. So I'm going to explain it to you very simply. Exposure is how much of the drug you're exposed to. Let me give you an example. If you have a small snow globe, like say, you know, 1 5-inch big, and you have a large snow globe, which is double the size, and you shovel the same amount of snow into those two globes, the small one and the big one, you put, you know, 1/2 cup into both of those snow globes, when you shake it, it's going to look like the smallest snow globe has got a lot more snow. And it's going to look like the largest snow globe has a lot less. So the smaller snow globe has more exposure to the snow. And the larger snow globe has less exposure. I'm hoping I make that kind of clear, because that really relates to our first point today, which is all about body weight. Now, I want you to imagine those two people that I spoke about at the beginning of the episode. We've got the man who weighs 3 times heavier than the woman. And think about this line that is pretty much in every Wegovy study by any government body worldwide. And it says that body weight was the most important covariant, resulting in lower exposure with higher body weight and vice versa. So the man, because of his body weight, is going to have a lower exposure to semaglutide. So he's going to have less of it swimming around in his larger body than the woman who is a third of his size. Now, the issue with that is that, again, in that document on page 37, the FDA document, the proportion of subjects reporting gastrointestinal side effects, in particular nausea, vomiting, it increased with increasing semaglutide exposure. So as you get more of the drug, it can affect your side effects. My first question about that is like, well, this is one of the largest differences, you know, a weight of a person. It affects how much is flowing around in their body. Well, why the hell aren't doctors weighing everybody and giving them a personalized dose? And there's a pretty obvious answer for that. Novo Nordisk sell pre-filled, preset pens. In the clinical pharmacology review by the FDA, this review highlighted that patients with a body weight less than 70 kilos had approximately twice the exposure to semaglutide compared to those weighing more than 110 kilos. So that's a really big difference. And yet they still argue that there's no need to adjust your dose. In European Medicines Agency assessment report of Ozempic back in 2017, they say this paragraph on page 51 of 156. Analysis showed that exposure of semaglutide was inversely correlated to body weight. Exposure increased by 40% in subjects weighing 55 kilos and decreased by 27% in subjects weighing 127 kilos, as compared to a standard weight of 85 kilograms. They then said, from a PK point of view, PK stands for population pharmacokinetics point of view, body weight dosing would be in favour for semaglutide. I wonder why that did not go ahead. The second point I want to make is your sex makes a difference. So if you're a man, it's different to if you're a woman. All of the government bodies are aware of this, that men and women react differently to semaglutide. And they've got some theories. They don't know specifically exactly why, but they've got some theories as to why. And it's got to do with body composition. Women are generally smaller than men. Metabolism and hormone levels. And women generally have a higher semaglutide exposure than men when given the same dose, possibly due to the lower average body weight and also lower drug clearance. Drug clearance means how fast that gets the drug goes out of your body. They say it can be up to 20 to 30% higher in women, the semaglutide levels. I just want to go back for a minute to talk about another difference with men and women, and that is in gastric side effects. Women generally show more gastric side effects than men. And you can see that in the FDA. The FDA have got a reporting system where people can report their side effects. And they have a 2-to-1 ratio of women reporting side effects than men. There's another thing that is pretty important to realize. It's gastric emptying. Men and women are different with how we clear our food or our food moves through our body at a different rate to men. One of the things that semaglutide does is it slows down how food is processed through your body. So you feel fuller. So it's staying in your stomach longer. That's a common thing. Even without semaglutide, on average, a woman's gastric emptying is 15 to 30% slower than men's, especially for solid food. Now, clinical studies have shown that semaglutide delays gastric emptying by about 30 to 40% in the early weeks of treatment. Women may have an additional 10 to 20% delay compared to men, which leads to food being in their stomach longer. I've got to talk more about this gastric emptying issue because I think it is an issue. And I'm going to talk about that more next week on the podcast. But basically, you can see that if you're a man or a woman, your sex does affect side effects, gastric emptying, clearance. So yeah, that's another thing to keep in mind. Just in case you're wondering, there are many medications where dosage adjustments are recommended because of gender. And the sort of medicines are antihypertensives. Some studies suggest that women may require a lower dose of certain antihypertensive medications due to differences in body weight and volume. Beta blockers, women may experience more side effects at standard doses. Antidepressants, research indicates that women often metabolize certain antidepressants differently, and for some women, they might require a lower dose. Pain medication, opioids, women often report greater sensitivity to pain and may experience different effects from opioids, leading to considerations for dosage adjustments. Immunosuppressants, medications may require dose adjustments based on gender due to differences in metabolism and clearance rates. These are all words that we've heard with semaglutide: clearance rates, metabolism. Yeah. So not every medication requires gender-specific dosing, but I think if it is possibly necessary, or if that flexibility could be offered, I think that would be a great. Many people can walk around and not know that they're pre-diabetic, and that's pretty scary. And there is a difference when you take semaglutide with semaglutide exposure. There's that word again. When I look at the European report on Wegovy, it says on page 47 that semaglutide exposure tended to be lower in subjects with pre-diabetes and diabetes compared to normalgic subjects. A normalgic person is someone who doesn't have diabetes or pre-diabetes. It says the difference was 4% and 15% respectively. So I think that's another thing that doctors should be aware of. If they know that you're pre-diabetic, maybe that's another thing to take into consideration. All of these little things can add up to quite a bit of a difference. Possibly looking at them on their own, they don't create that much of a difference, but when you add them all up, possibly they are. When they did the clinical trials for Wegovy, the common age of people doing the trials was usually in their late 40s and early 50s. There wasn't much, that was the common age of people. They have done one clinical trial on adolescents because now, as you probably are aware, they are prescribing Wegovy for adolescents, and the average age of the people in that trial was 15 years, but they've only done one trial on that, which I'm not sure what you think, but I think they possibly need to do more than that. When you looked at the clinical trials, there weren't many people in the older age groups, like 70 plus. There's not that many people tested in those trials. And there is, in all of those assessment reports for Wegovy from the European Medicines Agency, from the FDA, they all acknowledge that there is a slight difference in how an older person reacts to semaglutide. So that's another thing to keep in mind. And I have read before a comment saying that possibly dose escalation, which in other words, how fast you escalate your dose, should be slowed down in the elderly. Because usually as you get older, your metabolic rate, your gastric emptying all slows down. So there is an argument for that as well. So age is another thing to take into consideration. The last thing I want to talk about is race or ethnicity. I just want to give you an example of a typical clinical trial that they did. This one is trial numbered 4376, and you can read about it on page 120 of the FDA Wegovy report. It says that they tested a total of 803 subjects, and 80% were female. A total of 83.7, so nearly 84%, were white, 13% were black or African American, 2% were Asian, 0.1% were Native Hawaiian or other Pacific Islanders, and American Indian or American Indian or Alaska Native, 0%. And as far as ethnicity, a total of 7.8% were Hispanic or Latino. When I look at all of the trials, the vast majority, all of the STEP trials were the ones done for Wegovy, all of those were vastly white, usually around the 80% mark. And they did find that if you read through this FDA Wegovy report, there are differences in how Asian, Black, Alaskan Native, Pacific Islanders, Latinos, there is slight differences in how all of these ethnicities and races react to semaglutide. So that's another thing to keep in mind. It's another small thing, but it's another thing. If I'm just going to generalize for a moment, in general, Black and Hispanic participants often lose slightly less weight than white participants using semaglutide. Asian participants usually have more gastric issues, and that's possibly because of their smaller body size. Black patients may see fewer gastrointestinal side effects compared to white patients, and Asian patients may experience more severe nausea. This is thought possibly to do with a difference in gut hormone sensitivity. Possibly it's got to do with size. Don't know. But these are all things that I think a doctor should know, and I think they should keep in the back of their head and try and adjust accordingly. So when we get prescribed Wegovy, we get given these pre-filled pens with a pre-filled dose that is all owned by Novo Nordisk. Many of them are disposable. It's one jab only. You can't change the dose. Your doctor will commonly prescribe you the same dosing regimen that everyone gets, where you start at 0.25 milligrams. You go up after 4 weeks, then you go up again, then you go up again until you reach their maintenance dose of 2.4 milligrams. What I'm arguing for is much more flexibility in dosage. And the reason I'm arguing for that is because everybody is unique. When I speak to people about taking semaglutide, everyone has a different story to tell, but there are some commonalities to them. After looking at all of the clinical trials, reading through them, reading all the government regulators' documents, I think at the very minimum, a doctor should be taking into account the three bigger things as I see them. Your body weight, because that seems to affect it quite significantly. And the second thing that affects how semaglutide reacts in your body and your reaction to side effects and how successful you are is whether you're pre-diabetic or diabetic or normalgic. And a lot of people don't know that they're pre-diabetic. And the third thing is your sex, whether you're female or male, because women clearly react very differently to men and often are a smaller body size. And the other stuff that I've mentioned, age, race, and ethnicity seem to be slightly less impactful. But go back into those documents if you like, have a good look through them, and you'll see the same thing that I've been seeing. Why do you think the manufacturer has made it so difficult for people to change their dosage, to be on this particular dosing schedule, to have everyone on the same dosing schedule? I wondered about that a lot, and I thought, if this is the first time they've really had a weekly injection for weight loss that has been so embraced by the public, like millions and millions of people using it. And I'm wondering if now that they can get a better sense of real world data, what's actually happening in the real world, I wonder if they are wondering, well, maybe we should have been more flexible with it. Maybe we should have, you know, said to people, well, if the minimum dose is working for you, stop at that dose. If you're not feeling the nausea, great, stay there. If it's working for you, stop there for a while. But no, that's not how it's prescribed. So in general, that's not how it's prescribed. So that's my argument for more personalized dosages. I feel that that is really the way to go. And as a woman, I think there are so many things with women and semaglutide compared to men that I really think it's almost essential for women to have more control over their dosage levels. But there you go. And just to clarify, I'm not a doctor. This is just my opinion. I'm not, you know, don't take medical advice from me. All of the disclaimers are in the show notes. These are my thoughts, but you can certainly go into all of the links I've got. You can certainly check out all the documents in the show notes and make up your own mind. That's what I would suggest. I would suggest you become informed and make up your own mind. Investigating Ozempic is written and produced by me, Bernadette Fisher. Please see all the disclaimers in the show notes and don't forget to listen, follow, and subscribe. Thanks so much. See you next week.